This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's subject is, you're going to hear about it. It's the extraordinary story of one man's efforts to overcome incurable cancer using only natural methods. The book is N of One, and we're going to explain what that's all about in just a few moments. The author, Glenn Sabin, and Glenn has a remarkable story to share with us, and he's on a virtual crusade to get the word out about self-care measures and the potential to overcome even very challenging diagnoses. Glenn lives in Washington, D.C., he's the founder of FON Consulting. It's a business development firm dedicated to advancing integrative medicine as the new standard of care. And he's much in demand as a speaker and writer about integrative medicine and cancer prevention. He's got a website at glennsabin.com, and he's actually the co-author of this book. He wrote this book with a Stanford-trained oncologist, because he wanted to make sure that the book was rigorous in terms of its discussion of cancer. He just didn't want to throw out a lot of hearsay and anecdotes. He wanted it actually to conform with and meet the scrutiny of a conventionally trained oncologist. Isn't that right, Glenn?
Absolutely.
And so trace us back to your history. How did you get involved in this? It wasn't your intent to get involved in integrative medicine back in the 90s when you were confronted with a challenging health problem.
Sure. Back in 91, I was recently married and 28 years young, and that is when I was diagnosed with this fairly advanced stage of chronic lymphocytic leukemia, or CLL. And that really put me on the path over the years to get involved in integrative health and medicine as a career. At the time, I was actually a magazine publisher. So back in 1991, I was, as I mentioned, I was diagnosed with chronic lymphocytic leukemia. At the time, there was just a couple potential treatments for the disease. One was an experimental bone marrow transplant that had a 20% mortality rate, and the other was relatively new. It was watchful waiting, just basically waiting to see when the disease might make its first move and become more aggressive.
Mm-hmm. And for our listening audience not familiar with chronic lymphocytic leukemia, can you give them a thumbnail sketch of what that's like? Because, you know, there are leukemias and there are leukemias. This one is a sort of a slowly developing chronic leukemia, but it is progressive. And usually, you know, it's not immediately fatal like some forms of leukemia, like acute myelogenous leukemia, very deadly leukemia, but, you know, where they, it's kind of like the classic movie scene, you know, where you go to the doctor's office and the doctor says, hey, you know, make peace with your maker because you got 6 months to live. But it is something that is generally progresses, right? And is ultimately fatal, right?
Some folks can live for decades. It's typically an older person's disease. Mm-hmm. You know, most folks get it when they're in their 60s or later, and often these same folks will eventually, die from another disease, or mm-hmm. The CLL doesn't, you know, catch up with them. Back then, we knew very little about the different types of CLL, and now it's pretty pretty advanced in terms of the different ways, the different assays and tests that look at the very subsets of the disease that kind of inform how quickly they may develop with a doubling rate, with the increasing of white blood cells.
But the way it's discovered is that you didn't go to the doctor saying you were feeling horrible. You just went for routine tests, and the doctor said, oh, your white count is high, your lymphocytes were high, and then they did further investigation, and they said, oh, you have CLL, right?
Yes. I was just going in for a routine physical that I had put off for some time. When you're 28, it's kind of hard to get into a mindset of getting a regular physical. So it had probably been 5 years. It could have been longer.
So in retrospect, do you think that there were any factors in your lifestyle then? 20-somethings are not particularly conforming to a healthy regimen. So do you think that some lifestyle factors may have prompted that, or is that just the luck of the draw?
Well, I think partly, of course, every malignant disease is tied to genetics at some level. My diet was not the cleanest diet. I did tend to eat a good amount of processed foods and meat. And, although I was getting regular physical activity, it wasn't the cleanest lifestyle. And we have no idea when the disease might have taken root. It could have been 10 years prior to the
right.
Actual diagnosis. And you are correct. The diagnosis was just an elevated white count with elevated lymphocyte count. But I was at that point, I was carrying around a 7-pound spleen that normally weighs a couple pounds, and I didn't really notice that I was distended from this really large spleen. So that was caught, during the physical. So that really threw up some red flags.
Indeed. So let's focus on this N of one thing. I think, scientists and researchers, they know what N of one is, and we have a lot of health professionals listening, so they're in tune with that. But for some of our listeners, that's sort of a cryptic title. What does that mean?
So N in scientific terms is just the number, and the one in this case represents the size of a trial. So an N of one, there's what's called N of one trials that are becoming more popular as precision medicine really takes hold. In my case, N of one is kind of a noun. It's kind of, this informal experiment that I went through over the course of 25 years. It wasn't like it was a formal N of one trial where there was a randomized, controlled trial. Just so happened that it was chronicled over a 25-year period through, the Harvard Medical System.
And, I looked this up, and fairly recently, and you may be aware of this, there was an article in Nature, which is one of the world's foremost scientific magazines, and this was in 2015, entitled Personalized Medicine, Time for One-Person Trials. And what they're saying here, precision medicine, as you stated, is now all in vogue. It's like, instead of throwing darts blindfolded at the target, maybe you'll hit the target, maybe you'll hit the wall. You might get lucky, might have a bullseye. But precision medicine, very targeted, and they say it requires a different type of clinical trial that focuses on individual, not average responses to therapy, because a lot of, our drugs that we've developed, they only work infrequently. Statin drugs, maybe as few as 1 in 50 may benefit from a statin drug. So that's not very precision. That's not very targeted. And so what they're looking at is that studies that focus on a single person, known as N of one trials, will be a crucial way that we can evaluate therapies in the future. So you're really on the cutting edge of, what, even though you come from a non-research or scientific background, you're right on the cutting edge of where it's at in research.
Sure. There's also the basket trials, which are just very small size trials with subsets of, disease using targeted therapies. So, the scientific weight that would normally go to like a case study or a case report of one for one patient really wasn't you know, held in much esteem over the course of, you know, the scores of years. And now
it was, disparaged. It was thought like, you know, that's just, they use the word anecdotal. It's like, okay, yeah, fine, somebody got well, you know, but that's just like anecdotal. It's like, you know, wives' tale. It doesn't hold
absolutely
much weight. Yeah.
And as an N of one, you know, myself, I think we're each an N of one. We're each unique in life and health. We're a sample of one. We're an experiment of you know, of one. And I think that these are the cases, these of exceptional patient cases and case reports that follow these interesting, you know, outcomes. These are the ones that should actually really be looked at very closely, even though they are anecdotal.
Okay, so you got the diagnosis, and were you in the category of in 1991 of patient who immediately was told to go on medication, or did they say, look, you know, we don't have a lot to offer you, you know, when your numbers get sky high, we'll you know, hit you hard with some chemo drugs? What happened?
Sure. Well, 25 years ago, they didn't have the various cytogenetic and other assays that can look at this disease and tell what category I may fall into. So those tests weren't available. Those weren't done. I was diagnosed with this 7-pound spleen. So I was carrying around 5 pounds of, you know, of leukemic cells in my spleen. So I had a splenectomy to kind of debulk the tumor. It really wasn't a treatment for the cancer itself. It was just to debulk the tumor load. Mm-hmm. So the options then, post-splenectomy, was either a bone marrow transplant, which was experimental, and as I mentioned, had a 20% mortality rate, and it was potentially curative, or this watchful waiting. Now, you know, maybe a year prior to my being diagnosed, they may have put me right straight on a regimen of primarily chemotherapy, you know, chemotherapy, various drugs and prednisone and what have you. And that would have been the, you know, the standard of care. But they were just starting to follow patients more closely and not treat them immediately, since the regimen of these therapies was not curative. So they thought they would, you know, they would delay with certain, in certain cases, and just see what would happen.
So this kind of gave you an opportunity, you know, in the interim to say, hey, you know, I'm not just going to, you know, wait till the other shoe drops. You wanted to get active with some form of affirmative self-care, right?
Absolutely. The active observation for me wasn't satisfactory. If I was to just kind of wait for the other shoe to fall, you know, I wanted to be more proactive, and so I kind of termed it proactive observation, if you will. And I, you know, I set about trying to learn all I could about the biology of the disease, as well as learning all that I could about what I might do to take better control and to, you know, participate kind of in a patient-centered approach to participate in the management of my disease. And for the most part, that meant trying to get as healthy as possible, even though I had an underlying, you know, incurable malignancy.
Okay. And so what resources did you utilize to determine what the healthy lifestyle was? I mean, did you go gravitate towards a raw juice fasting regimen, or did you go to the opposite extreme, a paleo kind of diet with almost no carbohydrates, ketogenic diet? Where did you end up on that spectrum?
So this was back in 91, and the internet really wasn't very useful for doing this type of research. So I started reading a lot of you know, magazines and books, and going to the library and collecting a lot of data, and eventually doing a good amount of travel to meet with, consult with some of the authors whose work that I read and I connected with. And so, and this took some time, but over the course of several years, I did clean up my diet, you know, in a big way. And I started to eat a plant-strong diet. So clean, you know, clean foods, plants, beans, legumes, some select cold water fish. I cut out all dairy. I cut out all meat. I dramatically cut down on my sugar intake and started drinking a lot of heavily filtered water. And so that was the basis of my diet back then, which pretty much continues today. It's basically leans toward a Mediterranean diet, is pretty close to where I'm at today and what it's been.
So, typically with a patient with CLL, they'll go to the doctor, and at best you can hope that their numbers are stable. They may start, 14,000 or 18,000 or 22,000. And at best, every 6 months you show up and the doctor says, well, your numbers are stable. Or in the alternative, they start going up. So what happened in those first few years while you were exploring things?
Yes. So the oncologist and the hematologist look very closely at what they call the doubling rate of the white blood count, and that kind of indicates how fast or slow moving the disease may be, and that was even more important, back 25 years ago, before these assays were available today to look at the chromosomes and what have you. So I, I went 12 years with a white count that, for the first 12 years, that never really exceeded around 30,000, which I guess is, maybe 2.5 times normal.
Right.
But there's plenty
for,
of folks
for listeners, it needs to be under, 10 or 12. Certainly 10,000 is the upper limits of normal for a healthy person.
Sure.
Yeah.
But what was developing over time is the space within the bone marrow. The space in the bone marrow started getting crowded with a higher percentage of lymphocytes, mm-hmm. Over the course of time, to a point, where, I became sick, and at that point it was about 85 to 90% of what they call the intertrabecular space of the marrow was comprised of leukemic cells.
Hmm. And the net result of that is, ultimately you're going to get anemic. You're going to your white count will go up, but your red count, which is made in the bone marrow and your platelets, that may start to drop, right?
Yes. So with the lifestyle that I was leading, I had a stretch of a little over 12 years from 91 to 2003. And in the summer of 2003, I became quite ill with the full force and effects of a real acute episode of the CLL, where I was very anemic. I had a hemolytic anemia, Coombs positive, they call it, hemolytic anemia. I had a hematocrit, part of the red blood cells, where it was, around 19 or 20 or so, which was very low. I had a low-grade fever. I had night sweats. I was really ill.
That's a very slippery banana peel, I will tell you, from a medical standpoint. Is a patient who is at that stage of disease, frankly, doesn't have great longevity prospects, especially in those days before the advent of some of the newer medications that can at least somewhat tame this condition. None of the medications, even to this day, are curative.
Right. With CLL, well, today's standard of care is much different. Back then, that was certainly the case. There are certain types of CLL where a stem cell transplant can, in theory, cure less than half of the folks that go through it. So great strides there now, as well as other these targeted therapies, which maybe we'll get into. But back then, I was in a real difficult spot and, feeling dealing with this disease head on. So I, in addition to my diet, I was getting physical activity daily. I was taking select, dietary supplements, and I was just really trying to live an anti-cancer life, trying to create, a body and a mind that's, not very conducive for the cancer to to get worse, or at least that was my thinking as I was sticking with a really regimented, you know, protocol over the course of time. So when I became, very ill, I went and visited with my local Johns Hopkins oncologist, and then went up to Boston and visited with my my oncologist up at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. And there was a clear consensus that that I really needed to be treated like yesterday. And I was in a very dangerous, you know, position. And, you know, all these years, Dr. Hoffman, that I was kind of proactively observing what was going on, the whole idea with this approach was that the science would, you know, catch up with the disease. Mm-hmm. There would be better right. options as far as, yeah, better treatment right. options.
I think one message for many cancer sufferers is that if they can at least delay the progression of their disease, there's always hope that with all the cancer research going on, that their type of cancer may be treatable in 5 or 10 years. And, you know, even if the regimen you're on is not totally curative, that at least you'll be primed for taking advantage of a future therapy that's going to be available.
Absolutely. And that was my hope. Unfortunately, in 2003, there was one change with a particular monoclonal antibody that wasn't available back in 91, but it was the same regimen as far as the chemotherapeutic drugs and prednisone, as well as this monoclonal antibody called rituximab. And that's what I was told. That was the consensus, that I should start on this regimen immediately to kind of knock back, you know, this anemia that I had, and to, address this acute situation.
Did you do it?
I decided not to do it. And that was a really difficult decision to make, especially based on how I was feeling. It wasn't categorically that I wasn't going to do it. I just kind of punted on doing it at that time. And what I did is I went on a sabbatical from my business and revisited everything that I was doing at the time in terms of, you know, a select dietary supplements and diet and exercise and mind-body work. All the things that were part of my kind of protocol, I just took the time to really deeply consider what I was doing, make some changes to what I was doing, and my arrangement, my agreement with my oncologists, because I was in close communication with them, and my agreement with them was basically, you know, let me see what transpires over the next several weeks. I'll go ahead and get my blood taken to get, you know, a CBC, a complete blood count, and a CMP, and a couple other things, some basic labs, and we would measure, and we would see, you know, what was happening with the blood, and the blood would be the telltale sign of, you know, when I would perhaps get, you know, conventional care. So over the course of, you know, several weeks, I made these changes, and I would continue going into my hematologist's office to get my labs done. And over the period of about 10 to 12 weeks or so, there started to be, well, my levels plateaued. They weren't getting worse. I was still very sick, but it was clearly not getting worse. And then over the course of the next several weeks and couple months, there started to be a clear trend line where there was a group of three labs that showed that the counts were actually improving. And eventually, over the course of a few months, the counts completely normalized. There was no actually no evidence of disease. Based on my systemic blood, meaning by taking this blood and then doing taking a deeper look, you know, at the blood, there was just no detectable disease.
That's a very remarkable feat, and I want to do a deeper dive on what the ingredients were in your remarkable turnaround, because your N of one experience, while it is your individual experience, might prove valuable for many others suffering from related conditions. That's what this is all about. N of one, one man's Harvard-documented remission of incurable cancer using only natural methods. Today we're with the author, or the co-author, Glenn Sabin, who with a board-certified oncologist, Dr. Don LeMann, wrote N of one. And when we return, we're going to find out some of the components of a program that took a very advanced form of CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and turned it around. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.